Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. Today, I'm stoked to share my chat with DC pop-punk emo band Dear Spring. Dear Spring released their new EP, Moments, earlier this month on Open Your Ears Records. The band tells the crazy story of how they came together, defining their sound and getting connected with the local scene, and finding their place in the DC music scene. This was a super fun chat, and I always love getting to talk to bands that are from the area that I live in and who have shared musical experiences. If you're a fan of Saves the Day, I highly recommend listening to Dear Spring, and I hope you guys enjoy getting to know Washington, D.C.'s Dear Spring. Are you guys from DC, like in the city, DC?
Well, it depends which one of us you ask. Are all four of us on right now, by the way?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Sick. Great. I am in DC right now and have been, and Marty has too. The other two, I'll let you guys speak for yourselves.
Yeah, so I was born in Washington, D.C., but I spent most of my life growing up right outside in College Park, Maryland. So, you know, pretty much the same.
Right.
Yeah, and then I'm based out of Brockville, Maryland, which is probably like 20, 30 minutes outside of D.C.
Well, I will ask you where in Rockville, because that is where I am right now.
No, oh, shit, right, come on. Over. Yeah. Oh, that's sick. Here, I'll come to your house right now. Yeah. Just kidding.
That's so great. So are you all like originally from this area?
No, Jonah is. Right. My mom is British, and so I got to spend like my high school years in England in the height of the early 2000s emo pop punk wave happening then, which really is what got me to play the music I do today. So, but other than that, yeah, DC.
Rad. Awesome. Let's jump in. Each of you want to go around, introduce yourself, what you do in the band, and what got you into music.
Sure. I'll go first. I'm Dave. I play guitar and I sing a little bit. And what got me into music? Well, I come from a super musical family, all like folk musicians, which like I very quickly was like, I'm not trying to play the banjo. Like I'm not into this, but it was cool. Just like my whole family at all, every family gathering, there'd be like lots of sing-alongs and banjos and acoustic guitars and even a saxophone here or there thrown in for good measure. So that sort of got me started. But like my best friend, Mike Sestito, shout out to Mike Sestito, back like when I was 12, I had like a sleepover at his place. And I never got to hear this record, even though it had been out for a while, but I got to hear the Mark, Tom, and Travis show. And I just remember hearing the lot, like them vamping live and just like cracking dick jokes and all that stuff. At 12 years old, that was the shit. So I like immediately like asked him to teach me a song. He taught me Damn It on guitar, and then pretty much went out, bought a guitar, and it's been that way ever since. Nice.
Well, my dad plays a 12 string acoustic. So that was always really cool. Like, you know, this impossibly large instrument as like a little kid, I just knew I was like destined for guitar the second I could hold it. And 13th birthday, got a Fender Stratocaster. And then my kid sister was like, I want to play drums. So we got a drum set. And, you know, I don't know, a teenage boy who's not going to bang on some drums if they're available. So I started, I started playing both instruments and had a high school band. And then when my high school band, like we all graduated, I took a gap year and the rest of my bandmates went off to college. And so I was like, oh, I'll just get like a little, in the box recorder and just layer the sounds myself. And I was like, so bummed out that it didn't sound like census fail, let it infold you. Or like, you know, I was like so pissed. I was like, but I do that stuff. So I just like kind of fell super deep into production. And that's really what kind of put me on my path, was just like the love of making recordings and producing music.
Nice.
So I guess for me, music has always been like, you know, a big part of my life. I mean, like literally from when I was really, really, really young, my parents would do the thing where they like leave the classical station on as I'm going to sleep and shit. But I didn't start actually like playing until my grandfather, like I'd expressed some interest in playing the tenor sax. And my grandfather gave me his 1921 or something tenor saxophone. Played on that for a while, like that was dope. But at the same time, I was like, man, I kind of want to play guitar. So like, there's this one, like I remember this one day in high school where like, yeah, I skipped lunch and I just went to the performing arts building, and I walked into the main room and there was a Fender Strat laying up against like a Line 6 combo amp, and literally like there was this window in the room and there was just a beam of light coming in, like literally hitting the guitar. I was like, oh man, well I gotta freaking do it now. So yeah, and then I started playing from there, and the rest of it just kind of came one after another.
Yeah, similar to Jonah, just music has been like a central part of my life. I'm actually Pakistani, so South Asian culture, you know, there's the Indian side and then the Pakistani side. Pakistanis are a little bit more conservative, so they don't really showcase a lot of music. But mm-hmm. The cool thing is my parents were very liberal. So they exposed me to a lot of Indian classical music. So like Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. And my dad also loved classic rock. So I was exposed to like Pink Floyd, the Eagles, you know, Dire Straits. And then also like Indian classical music at the same time. So as I got a little bit older, my dad like finally got me this shitty Samet guitar and a terrible Crate amp. And I probably won't get endorsed by either company because I just spoke ill about them. But
it's Samet.
So, I know, Samet, dude. Damn it. So yeah, I just started getting into a lot of pop punk. And I grew up in the Bay Area, so like bands like No Use for a Name, Fighting Jax was on Tooth and Nail. A lot of fat record bands, basically. That's what I was exposed to, and that basically, you know, that genre has stuck with me, you know, to today. So it was always pop punk has always been like near and dear to my heart too. So
that's awesome. What brought you to the East Coast? Was it Come Work on the Hill or college?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, now, that's a common story, you know. How many of my friends started off as hill staffers? So like,
so I graduated college. My wife and I, we moved down. She was my fiance at the time, and we moved down to Orange County. And I was like in a synth pop band over there, and we made it on like MTV Next, the dating show, and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool. So I seriously thought I was the coolest guy in the world, but really, like, no one's ever heard my shit. It was just right before the housing market crashed. So when 2008 hit, like, just my wife got laid off and we couldn't afford living in such an expensive place. So we moved out to Raleigh, North Carolina, where my folks live. And that's when I got exposed to a lot of Raleigh bands, such as like Mercy, Mercedes, Farewell. Like, these are all kind of like Epitaph bands, basically. Yeah. And I just still, like, you know, wanted music to be a big thing for me. So after Raleigh, it was kind of a little bit of a slow paced environment. I got an opportunity to move up to Virginia. So I've been out here since 2010 and still out here now in Rockville, and loving it.
Nice. Brad, how'd the band get started?
Ooh. Well, Marty, maybe you should start that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about your want ad, Craigslist want ad.
So yeah. The power of Craigslist is so real. Like, I was, you know, like a home studio, like always tinkering, adding things to my home studio. Like, I lived on Craigslist and like just traded gear. I feel like I was like the biggest spokesperson for it. And like, I would peruse the like community thing for musicians, like, a lot. And I was playing in a ska punk band at the time. And it's not really my thing. Like, I was always like bummed that I wasn't doing like, you know, like the emo pop punk thing that was really like what I actually enjoyed most. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to put together some demos of like stuff and put it up on Craigslist. And Cam responded to it and was like, oh, I like the demos. Like, let's meet up. We met up. He's like such a sweetheart. We were friends instantly right away. And we discovered we had this mutual friend who I was opening a recording studio with at the time. And he was like, yeah, man, when I moved up here, I sold him my amp. And I was like, the JCM 800. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, dude, the freaking amp, I used that to make the demos that you responded to on Craigslist. It was like your amp. You're like, I love the sound of that guitar, man. I'm going to respond to that. It's his own amp. So it was just sort of like a random, a weird synchronicity. And Dave and I went to George Washington University in DC. And I ran a student recording studio that was in one of the dorms. And I recorded Dave's metal band, The Legend Lives On. It was sick.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And he was like one of the first people I called. And it was the three of us for like a long time until Jonah came on the scene.
Yeah. And I actually met Dave on a way to see Periphery. Like I jumped in the car and there was Dave, and then we've been friends ever since, 10 years.
Yeah. It's crazy, the 10 years, right? Cause it was Periphery at Ram's Head. And then 2 weeks ago it was, Jerry Cottrell at Ram's Head. Right. That's kind of crazy.
That is actually, yeah, that is a coincidence. Wow. That's awesome.
That's rad. Where'd the name come from?
Ooh, it was one of the, we were probably a band for well over like a year, maybe 2 years, and like struggling. We couldn't find a vocalist, struggling to like complete the lineup. And it was like probably the biggest disagreement and longest battle to pick a name. Deer Spring was just one of the demos that I wrote and recorded for the concept of the band. And, I was just one of those cases where you just like boot up Pro Tools and you're like, what do I call this file? Like, I don't know. And I was just like, it's springtime right now. It just kind of like sounded good. But and it was what we all finally agreed on. It was not really like poetic or cool, but that's how it came about.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool too. It definitely wasn't an effortless experience though.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love the name. I just feel like the process wasn't like as like select. I guess we were very selective, but like the origin wasn't like didn't come in like a moment of super artistic choice.
Right. You were picky, but the name doesn't like have special meaning or represent anything. It's just like, yeah, that Pro2 files, that works for us. Like,
yeah.
It's like, we're playing the show, we have to put something on the flyer, that's the name. And then, yeah, I mean, and then it sticks. The band,
you name the band, but then like, it's the name and the band has to sort of like decide what that actually feels like, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like we really like own that name and I'm like, feel super attached to that name now, but it really took like a few years of finding our sound and like our group personality to really like give Deer Spring it's like the feeling that I feel like it has now.
Yeah. You guys have mentioned like pop punk and someone mentioned Sensefield and Blink-182 in here, but were there like bands or specific like sections of those genres that you were trying to emulate when you started writing and have like honed in on as you've like gelled as a band?
Thrice was the first. Like Marty, Cam, and I, first thing that we all agreed upon was like Thrice is a dope band and we all love their music and we want to incorporate those influences. I think we all have different influences. Like when I first started picking up guitar, definitely Blink-182, but also like the first bands that I got to see live and like got into as like a consumer of music were all from my older sister, who's like 6 years older than me. And so like I was pretty young during the 90s, but she was like old enough to like have taste then. So like the first few records I heard were like, you know, Eve Six Records, Third Eye Blind, you know, all sorts of like semi-sonic, like just the stuff that was that, and not just like a band that I heard on the radio, but like randomly, like actually having that full, their full albums, right? Yeah. And like listening through to that Third Eye Blind self-titled album from cover to cover over and over again, because it's like four CDs my sister gave me, like Third Eye Blind self-titled, So Much for the Afterglow, like those are the ones I had for the first like few years. And so like, I think because, you know, a bunch of us also like were really inspired by that time in, you know, rock and punk music, we're influenced by that a lot. But I think our current tastes and, you know, what the culmination of all of our musical inspiration has been is probably what's the most impactful on like the EP, right? That we're getting ready to get excited about and promote. Cause I think we really did refine our sound this time around compared to before, where we really had a sound, but I think we were like pulling in disparate influences and they would showcase in different ways. Whereas now it feels more like they're cohesive, but I've said enough. I'll let someone else talk.
Yeah. And just one thing that I remember Marty, you know, kind of said to us when we were playing back the EP was, we had an opportunity to work with Nick Bracezzi, at Grabwell Studio from Man Overboard, and just phenomenal, producer. But he was able to, you know, basically bring out the best version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we are very proud of right now, because we didn't have to compromise. We all have our collective like influences, and we were able to like cohesively bring them together, into this EP that you heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause to me, it reminds me of Saves the Day and like a newer band, The Hotel Year. And then like, there's a very obscure band that put out, I think, one record called Broken Cedars. And like, mm-hmm. It reminds me of that like leaning more into the emo than the pop punk, but it, like, you can tell that like punk influence is still there.
That's very flattering. Thanks for saying that. I think you really made Cam's year with the Saves the Day comparison.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My reaction. I was gonna say, like, was there a specific album of Saves the Day that you kind of like heard? Not saying that was my intent or our intent, but
sure. I think each song encapsulates like different eras of Saves the Day, because Saves the Day is such a transitional band, and like there are moments that remind me of In Reveries or Through Being Cool, right? Like it. So it just reminds me of Saves the Day in general overall. So. Yeah.
You're saying all the right.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
Glad you live next door to me, man. We're gonna hang out.
Just listen to Saves the Day. It'll be great.
I just sound like a fucking creeper. I'm sorry.
One of the things that's like so different about this EP, and like that Dave was mentioning before, like about our previous work. You know, we're like, I'm an engineer, Dave's an engineer, Jonah's an engineer. Like, we're all so comfortable with production. And like, why would we go to someone else when we're all like very confident in that? And I love how our early stuff sounds, like sonically. I'm super, super pleased with it. But I always felt like we were like, you know, we were like crossing the finish line of like getting like an EP length of songs, like the material we like met the amount of playtime that we wanted to get to. And that was kind of it. And like, this was, I mean, I think that we had like, you know, 15 fully pre-produced instrumental songs, and we took that to Nick Bracezzi, and like, we're like, all right, just your raw, like first impressions of these, like, let's pick those most impactful five. And then even from that point, just the editing process, you know, like he was really great at like, he'll just tell you like, this song didn't have a chorus, doesn't have a chorus yet.
And we're like, what are you talking about? It doesn't have a chorus, dude. I don't know what to tell you. You can go get a slice of pizza down the street and come back and it'll still not have a chorus.
How'd you guys get connected with Open Your Ears?
Oh man. Through like our, you know, relationships that we've built over the last few years with other bands and the, you know, scenes around the DMV, and also up towards like Philly and New Jersey and down towards Richmond, obviously, you know, I think we spent, you know, the year or two leading up to the pandemic and then throughout the pandemic really reshaping what Deer Spring is, and also taking a very different approach and like, you know, leaning into the scene, like trying to go out to see the cool bands that aren't on the radio and aren't in the Spotify playlist necessarily, but like are playing at the venues where we book shows, right? And just like going out and seeing them when it's a similar genre or stuff that I'm into, and checking them out and playing shows with bands, and then getting to know those dudes because you've seen them come through town a few times, or you've gone through their town, and talking to them and actually becoming friends with them. You know, maybe you crashed on their couch after a show one time. Maybe they were looking for a spot to crash. Maybe you just hit it off because you guys thought both of your bands were sick and that you both sounded great, right? And I think it's easy to just play and like be like, great set, dude, great set, right? And like do the payout and like, and just be like competitive and stuff. But like, that's, you're shooting yourself in the foot if you're not realizing that if you're playing these shows with these other bands and they're tight, like, you guys probably have a lot in common. You'd probably be friends if you like talked and like spent some time developing relationships, and forget about what that does for the band. It's just like nice to know there are other people out there that dig the same stuff as you and like want to contribute to making a scene, right? So like, I think it's been just a lot of that over the last few years, and getting to know these bands, you know, good friends of ours that were already on the label, like Flight Club, or hearing other sick bands that we, when we found out about the label, that were on the label, be like, oh shit, these bands are dope, right? Yeah. It was really through like those personal connections that we wound up getting hooked up to the label and talking to them and seeing that they were interested.
That like sense of community is like new for us, which is really what we're like really stoked to just join up like a team, like a roster of really awesome, like-minded bands. And that concept is sort of like, you know, like a rising tide lifts all boats. Like, we're all fans of each other, you know, and it's just like the networking side of things is something I really struggle with. Like, I'm not like a super outgoing social butterfly personality. And like, I'll just be very content, like to create my art in my studio and like throw it up on Spotify, you know, like that's it. And that's kind of like what we did for like a while. So it's like this next chapter is really sort of like we're learning like the other ways to like be a band and to be like an active participant in like the scene.
Yeah. Because it's the question that will never end. How did the pandemic affect you guys as a band?
It was really like a period of, I think, you know, self-reflection for all of us in different ways. I know for me, I had been at the same day job for 6 years, and it took like 1 month and a half of being in the pandemic, and I quit and found a new job finally. And it was like, it was an opportunity for me to like re-examine a lot for myself. And part of that was, you know, we had some momentum because we had just recorded our first single with Nick, a track that we dropped last year called Dumb Luck. Which we're all super proud of to this day and love playing, right? We hadn't released it by the time the pandemic happened, but we had it, right? And it was our first experience working with a producer too, like Marty said. So I think walking into the pandemic, it was like, this is an opportunity for us. First of all, for me, it was like, it's an opportunity to go down the rabbit hole with my computer and just produce a ton of stuff and make a lot of music, and a new way for us to collaborate. You know, we tried some things. We did some covers. We had never done covers before. We recorded them completely remotely. So like, I tracked my guitar parts. Cam did DIs through his MacBook. Marty did his own drums and bass. And then Jonah recorded his own vocals. And then, you know, Marty mixed two of the songs and I mixed two of the songs. And it was really cool. It was like a cool opportunity for us to try that out and try to keep, you know, generating content and do some things that we hadn't done before, right? Yeah. But like I said, we hadn't done covers or anything other than like what Marty just said. Created our art, put it online, and like let it do its thing. And so it was big for us, and I think we really made that transition into being like, we're all online now because we can't be together, so let's like be part of the community. I mean, that's what I'd say. I don't know what the rest of you guys would say.
No, it really was like, in a lot of ways, like, I think everyone kind of had that moment of like, well, like, how am I going to use this time? Like, am I going to take a pause and like, you know, or am I going to, I don't know, am I going to get more active? And like, I think that we all kind of collectively decided, like, let's just make the most of this time and really like, you know, sort of redouble our efforts. Let's like put more focus into it. Let's not like, let's not pause and wait for this to like go away or to like for things to return back to the way we are. And we'll pick up where we left off. We were like, no, let's double down.
Yeah, we were thinking like, hey, you know, should we just take a kind of a hiatus or a break? But honestly, we adapted to the change, to that pandemic. And Marty was nice enough to actually teach me how to use, you know, a DAW system basically to record, because he mentioned Jonah himself and Dave are producers. I'm not a producer, and I can proudly say that. I'm the outlier of the band. But he taught me how to do all the tracking and whatnot and program drums. So that was an opportune time, you know, for me to feel like I'm more part of the band, because I could do something that was definitely outside of my comfort zone. But also, I think that was the catalyzing moment when we were doing those covers that Dave mentioned, that for me, it was catalyzing because it inspired me to write some new material. And I think it did the same for everyone else. And because of that, that's why we got to this EP. So yeah, you know, there's definitely some negative sides to the COVID pandemic, but I felt like that kind of created a new version of Dear Spring, I would say, or a reinvigorated version of Dear Spring. Another day in Fade. The nights are getting colder and I'm feeling weak. Bet the wolves make easy prey out of them. Wishing I could say I have somewhere to be. We've got 3 weeks left to turn the ship around. When you drop me, put my feet in fertile ground. Cause it goes one, two, three, and times.
Talk to me about this EP. What was like your lyrical inspiration? You've talked about the process of recording it, but what was like your lyrical inspiration and your hopes for this as you were recording it?
Sure. So, I mean, the vocal writing process has more or less stayed the same even from when, you know, really early on, which was, you know, the guys would sort of pour their hearts and blood, sweat, and tears into getting like really dope songs out, making sure the drums were perfect, like the guitars were doing what they needed to do. And then I would sort of get these instrumentally complete songs and I'd sit with them for a while. And like, usually I would just like listen to them over and over, see emotionally what, like where I was being drawn with the song, like what they were doing. Then sort of do like a stream of consciousness and pull the lyrics out of that. Also like a lot of this, like this time around, Dave actually contributed a lot more on that front, like writing pretty much like the entire lyrics for one of the songs, and then adding like stuff in here and there, and everybody else in the band is also getting a lot more active in it. So it's really nice to have that thing to like build on. Although like, I don't necessarily go into writing the lyrics with, I guess, necessarily a cohesive message. It really is like where the music is taking me.
Yeah.
But I'll say on this one specifically, it like, I wanted to write it from a really like vulnerable place, and just talk about things that I've been going through and sort of experiencing along with, you know, the kinds of things that everybody else in the band had been going through. I mean, it was the pandemic. We were in the heat of that. Everybody else was doing, you know, well, it's like, you know, trying to adjust to that kind of stuff. And so I wanted to try to sort of take the experiences that I've been through and gone through and put it in a way that I felt like a lot of people could probably relate to in that moment. So I don't know if I can say there's like a necessarily a continuous message, but that's at least, you know, where the lyrics came from and, you know, what I was sort of trying to do with each track.
As a band from DC and the DMV, do you think about yourselves in the context of the greater DC music scene, as much punk and hardcore and emo came out, you know, in the 80s and like the 90s and Discord, like, do you ever look and be like, feel like you're a part of that?
Oh yeah.
Go ahead, Jonah, please.
No, I've been playing in sort of like the DMV area since like 2014, mm-hmm. with like a bunch of different bands and stuff like that. And it was the kind of thing where, you know, like bands like All Time Low, like I was active in a lot of like pop punk groups in that scene. And it's just like always one of those things, no matter like what area of music I was playing, because I really played in a lot of different styles. Like I was in doing like bluegrass stuff for a while, like a lot of metal projects and the pop punk stuff. And it's like no matter who I was playing with, what group, what genre, there was always like, oh yeah, like that band from our area that like also plays this genre and like made it huge. It's like it was impossible to like go into music and not hear about like those bands, those names. And just like over the years, like continuously like meeting new people and like playing shows like this, me personally, I definitely feel like really connected to the scene in this area. Cause I mean, yeah, a lot of crazy music has come out of this area. And like, even like a few years ago, we were, you know, really close to downtown Bethesda, where like, you know, Taylor Larson was headquartered doing all of the like Sumerian record bands and shit. I mean, it's always something like that. So I've always felt a pretty deep connection with the music scene here. Yeah.
In our, in the video that we just put out for Every Now and Then, like we purposefully went to like the really iconic, like DC venues just for little cameos. And like when we're sort of like cheesing it up on like the Fort Reno stage, like that's like 2 minutes away from like Dave's in my house. Like we play tennis there all the time. Nice. And stuff. So it, but it is kind of funny. I do feel like musically pretty, like maybe removed from that stuff, like maybe just a little too far out of reach, like in the timeline and like sonically to feel like a real kinship with like, you know, Fugazi, Minor Threat and stuff like that. For sure. But it is like, I do definitely feel that sense of pride. Like when I do like drive past Fort Reno and like when, you know, just like getting to experience music at the, at these like really iconic venues and know that that's like part of history and that we're finding our own, like our own path, but in this really like historic, musically historic place that is very like foundational to the music that we do play. So it's like an awareness and like a definite like affection for that chapter for sure.
Yeah. Like I know, like growing up in this area, going to shows at Black Cat and DC 9 and 930 and all the clubs. And then like at Fugazi's final Fort Reno show. And like, then it's like, you're playing Fort Reno and you played Black Cat, and you played DC 9 and you played Voltage Lounge RIP and you played Rock and Roll Hotel RIP. And you're just like, yeah, this is the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I feel like the DC area has definitely evolved. There's been new, you know, musical like venues popping up, and Songbird Cafe is like another one that I feel like is more on the newer side because it's just transitioned over to Union Market, I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just feel like DC is definitely an interesting marketplace. And there's just a lot of cool venues. So I feel like it's honing into like those Discord bands that you were referencing before, but I feel like there's almost a new kind of new sound or new element of music that's coming out.
So what's the rest of 2022 look like for you guys? You got big summer tour plans, or you just letting this record kind of take its course?
We're not just gonna put the music on the internet and not do anything with it. No, we're playing a bunch of dates over the summer. So we'll be playing in Fredericksburg, Virginia on June 11th. I think you said that this would be before that. Cool. Yep. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Sweet. And we'll be on the road, hopefully, with Jet Jag at the end of June, which will be sweet. Couple dates in North Carolina, Virginia, in the DC area. And then we'll also be playing, I think, a bit more in the fall. We've got some exciting runs set up, some tours that we can't announce yet, even at that time. But really exciting stuff that we can't wait to talk more about. And hopefully making it down to Richmond to play with a bunch of the other Open Your Ears Records bands at something special and fun. So I'll leave it at that.
For listening to As the Story Grows. Our intro music was written and composed by Jeremy Hunt. The As the Story Grows theme is by Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can join us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. Be a part of our community and join the ongoing conversation over on Discord. If you enjoy this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never thought-